A pause in the great fall of China. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with a look at business and the economy as Wall Street gets going. In the last 2 weeks, we've seen the most rapid fall in China's currency in decades, apparently due to some financial engineering by central bankers in Beijing. But it's a new week, and today at least, the great fall, as I'm calling it, seems to have stopped. The dollar fell about 0.5% today, and the yuan rose. It's at 619.4 to the dollar. PNC's senior international economist Bill Adams joins us from Pittsburgh, PA. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So is this an important milestone, do you think, or just maybe a quick pause?
Hard to say whether this is going to lead into a new strengthening of the yuan or not, but I think the depreciation certainly is the milestone. It shows the Chinese government wants market participants to see two-sided risk in the exchange rate, wants us to think of the exchange rate as something more market-determined and something that can fluctuate more than it has historically.
The Chinese government seems to have been worried about speculators who got it in their heads that the yuan only goes up and was going to fix those guys.
The Chinese government has been trying to shake out speculative positions, short-term investments that would have profited if the yuan had only appreciated. But I think the other explanation of why they depreciated is this Ides of March explanation. They widened the amount by which the currency is allowed to fluctuate each day from 1% to 2% around a daily fix that the central bank sets. And they didn't want to see the currency suddenly appreciate a whole percentage point when that change was made. To prevent that appreciation, they've had the yuan depreciate a bit.
It's kind of a gutsy move, tinkering with the currency in this way at a time when you do see a lot of signs of weakening in the Chinese economy. There's some today from the people who do the ordering at Chinese factories.
That's definitely true. A number of Chinese economic indicators have been either the weakest since the Great Recession or the weakest since 2001. And I think the fact that they're willing to make this change shows that the growth that they're seeing, even though it's much weaker than China saw historically, is still fast enough that they feel confident in the labor market. And they think they can make this type of a change that they think is necessary to make China a more modern and globally integrated economy.
PNC economist Bill Adams is also co-author of In Line Behind a Billion People, How Scarcity Will Define China's Ascent in the Next Decade. Mr. Adams, thank you.
Thank you.
Apple is reportedly in talks with the cable and internet giant Comcast about a new streaming and on-demand TV service. According to the Wall Street Journal, Comcast might be persuaded to offer a private instead of a shared channel for all the data required. Apple would try to make the case that a private conduit is not the same thing as a special premium internet service. The latter might run into current FCC rules that stop internet companies from playing favorites. Also note those network neutrality rules are in court. Were you just thinking about a career change? I'm intuitive. I just know these things. As part of our collaboration with the New York Times, reporter Paul Sullivan takes a look at some mid-career switchers who are learning to write software, that is to say, learning to code.
Last May, at age 57, Patsy Price walked away from a good mid-level management job at Google to learn to code.
My job was pretty great, but I felt obsolete.
So Price signed up for an intensive 12-week class at General Assembly, one of a handful of new schools around the country where you can learn to code quickly, sometimes in a day, sometimes weeks. It wasn't easy. The code was hard to learn, and the grandmother of two found the students were a lot younger.
I like to think of myself as a 1956 T-Bird, and I'm going in and I'm competing against Ferraris, Maseratis, Priuses, you know, and coding wizards, really.
Wizards, indeed. Tim Latorre, another mid-career switcher at 42, spoke to me in a General Assembly classroom. He described the age difference in his coding class as a little Harry Potter-esque.
Half of us were what I call muggles, normal people probably coming from a different discipline, and then the other half of the class were who I'd call wizards, usually younger, and they could pick up coding so much quicker.
Latorre says he struggled to keep up with the intense pace. A turning point came when he was assigned to work in a group of six on a project. Three wizards, three muggles.
And the wizards just took off. They left us for dead.
Latorre dug in and made it through. And when it was over, he quickly got a job at a startup focused on personalized marketing. In the interview, he says he could see the hiring manager's eyes light up when Latorre mentioned his previous 15 years as a graphic designer.
That richness of experience combined with the skills can really be a core asset.
Jake Schwartz is the CEO and co-founder of General Assembly. He says the hardest part for mid-career switchers can be just hanging in there when the coding gets tough.
It does involve a certain amount of making yourself vulnerable when you go back into the classroom after many years.
Patsy Price, the 57-year-old former Googler, says she learned that lesson quickly.
I just need to give myself permission to listen and learn and not hold myself up to their standard. If I did, I would have been just crushed and I would have quit.
Price is now a junior developer at SmartTip, a real estate app company. She says one of the reasons she loves this new job is because she can be so useful now that she can code.
I'm basically making half of what I made a year ago, but I'm four times happier.
And isn't that what retraining is all about? I'm Paul Sullivan for Marketplace.
That piece was produced by Carrie Donahue. There's more about retraining for the workforce of the future in tomorrow's Your Money section of the New York Times. Marketplace.org will also accumulate coverage as the week goes on. First, there was Mt. Gox, and as of this morning, another Bitcoin exchange has frozen accounts after sustained attacks by hackers. Vercurex is based in Beijing, while Bitcoin's critics say it is money laundering on a stick and prey for hackers. Supporters like its independence from government authority. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.